All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, world. Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a CW-2 type helicopter pilot, Republic of Vietnam, 1969. Welcome to Veterans Radio. We got a great program for you today. The sun is shining. It's 70 degrees. Winter? What winter? I'm not sure where it went, but I'm very happy that it's gone, although my wife says it may come back, but I'm hoping that it won't. We've got an interesting program for you today. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got Bill Patterson will be on, and Bill was a truck driver in Vietnam, and he's got a book out called Vietnam Convoy Trucker. And so I'm excited to have Bill on. We've been talking earlier on in the week, and he's got some great stories. He was, we'll get into it more when I bring him on the air, but he was in the same area of Vietnam that I was, and many of the places he saw on ground level, I saw from the air. So I'm excited about that. Hey, if you want to give it, if you're a truck driver and you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call here at WAAM on Veterans Radio. That's 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Or you can call us toll free at 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET-1600. All right. Joining me in the studios right now is two people. I was going to say couple, but I don't know if that's appropriate for this particular comment. But anyway, I received a song earlier in the week from Suzanne McDermott, and she said I had to listen to this song. So I listened to the song, and I think it's a great song. And so she and her partner came over, and I want to introduce you to the Veterans Radio audience. So Suzanne McDermott, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
I know. And your partner, Jim Curry, is from Plymouth. And Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And I want to thank Jim for his service because he's a Vietnam-era veteran. So I'm glad you survived. I don't know where you were, but you got to go to Germany. I put Germany down for where I wanted to go, but my orders must have gotten mixed up with yours. And so I ended up going in the other direction. So anyway, Suzanne and Jim are musicians and obviously very talented musicians from what I've been able to hear. And they go around the local area putting on shows for military. Well, not just for military, but they have a military component to it where they sing the traditional military songs and so forth. And tell me how you got involved in this, Suzanne.
Well, James and I met at church, at Northridge Church. We were both in the choir. And when you're doing many services, you're sitting together there all day because the next service is coming in 2 hours. So he brought his guitar, and many of us ladies just sat around and started singing. So we found out that our voices harmonized well and that we should start a group. So we started doing this, and we started noticing that people needed theme shows. So that's kind of what we specialize in, are the different theme shows. And it's all the traditional holidays, but we also have extra shows like a dog show where we're dressed like dogs and the themes are about dogs and et cetera. I know it's kind of funny to you.
It sounds like we're bringing back vaudeville here.
Yes. But the military shows, and anytime we do stuff to honor our veterans, we do get a lot of requests for that, and there must not be a lot of people that do military songs or whatever. So we do have a lot of requests to do military shows.
Well, we'll hopefully get the word out about you and Jim out there, and so that you guys can do some more shows. There's a lot of veteran fundraisers that are done in the local area, and they're always looking for talent,
people
to come and entertain, and especially we just did one down in Ypsilanti at the Sidetrack to raise money for Warriors and Caregivers, and they had a musical group that came in to perform at that, and of course they're all over the place, so we'll make sure. Jim, have you always been in music, or is this something that you've always done?
I've been in entertainment for 41 years about that. I mean, been doing it a long time. And I played at different bars, locals, before I met Suzanne. Then when I went over to Germany to serve my duty, I was in this coffee house and I did Bye Bye Miss American Pie by Don McLean. Mm-hmm. And this guy, you know, this agent was there, and he says, boy, you really sound good. So from that point on, I got booked different shows, you know, like six or seven shows. And one of the major artists that I performed warm-up was Eric Burton and the Animals.
Oh, we do have to get out of this place.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of his songs. So I did that when I was in Germany. You know, I played. Then I also did my duty at the same time. It was very nice to meet a lot of people and get. I made a lot of friends in Germany right now. I mean, I still email with my friends.
Well, I always admire people that can play music at all. I unfortunately have no musical talent at all. We won't even go there. My dad wanted me to, or my mother wanted me to play the clarinet, and I think I took two clarinet lessons in, and my dad took the clarinet away and said, here's your football, go outside and play. Something about broken glass or noises, I'm not sure what it was. So I didn't get to do that, but luckily my son and my grandson are very talented, and I can't think of that. Well, all right, let's talk about your song. The song that you sent me is called I'll Raise My Flag, Suzanne. Can you tell me about, a little bit about this song? Because I want to play a little bit of it.
It's about honoring our veterans. And it's also about the common people, you know, the waitresses, you know, people who build bridges, CPA people. And, you know, we're just regular people. And some of us go to war, and some of us are veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to acknowledge and, you know, raise our flag and honor our veterans. And,
this is what motivated you. Okay. Well, we always talk about here on Veterans Radio about the ordinary people who have done extraordinary things.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're done, they come home and they're ordinary people again.
Yeah. Right.
And so let's hear this song. This is by Suzanne McDermott and Jim as well, right?
Yes.
So Jim Curry is also involved with this. And so are you ready? Here it is. I'll Raise My Flag.
A waitress can give you a coffee. A mother can wipe a tear. Several men can build a bridge, but none of them come near to your early morning rises and long and dusty days. We are proud Americans who deliver, no matter the price we pay. For your service I'll raise my flag, your honor escalates. For your courage and your footings have made you as strong today. Thank you for our freedom, a bill we cannot pay. Because we're America strong, I'll raise my flag today. A teacher can solve a problem, a fan can shout and cheer, a CPA can do your taxes, a hunter can track a deer. To your early morning rises and long days, we are proud Americans who deliver, no matter the price we pay. For your service I'll raise my flag, your honor escalates. For your courage and your footing have made you as strong today. On you, red, white, and blue, your colors shine so true. For your service,
That was Susan McDermott. That was a great song. It's called I'll Raise My Flag. So how do we get a hold of this? If our listeners would like to get one, where do we go to get one of these?
Well, they can contact Jim Corey at hotmail.com, and that's J-I-M-C-O-U-R-Y at hotmail.com. And I have permission to give you his phone number, 734-459-1088, and you can make arrangements with him.
Okay, so then also if we wanted to book Jim, we could contact you for that. If we wanted to bring you in for a fundraiser or something along those lines.
Yes, that's true. You can call me. I handle most of that.
Okay, and you also gave me a CD, so I'm anxious to listen to this.
And
hopefully we can have the two of you back on sometime in the future and maybe work something out. Yeah. Thank you very much for being on the program.
This is our first CD that we recorded, so it's kind of the first one we did. Mm-hmm. We both wrote the songs together. We are working on a second CD right now, so working on that right now. So, you know, I think there's some great songs on there if you listen to them.
All right. Well, we will do that. Thank you both very much for being on Veterans Radio. And the song again is I'll Raise My Flag. If you go to our website later tonight, when we archive the program, I'll have a link for the song on there and you can listen to it right there. So thank you both for being on Veterans Radio. And I look forward to talking and working with you in the future.
I look forward to it, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us on the program.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for the time. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to be back with Bill Patterson, a Vietnam convoy trucker. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Baby, don't you want to go? I'm going to some place where I've never been before. I'm going where the water tastes like wine. I'm going.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we want to welcome to the program a new good friend of Veterans Radio, and his name is William E., better known as Bill Patterson. And Bill, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's
I also have Tim Campbell, who was in my company in Vietnam, the 319th Transportation Company. He's on the phone extension here with me.
Okay. Well, hi, Tim. How are you?
Hi, Dale. How are you?
Just fine. So we got two Vietnam convoy truckers on our program today. So I was really excited about reading your book, Bill, and I told the audience already is that you were in Vietnam around the same time I was, which was 1969, and your territory or your routes were everywhere I went.
Yes. Yes, and you and I talked about that. We traveled probably 60 to 100 miles around Saigon in all directions and delivered mostly ammunition, but cargo, any type of cargo. And Tim and I both drove the identical same truck as did all our company members, the 5-ton multi-fuel thing.
Well, I think it's exciting. Could you and the thing about your story, Bill, is that you are an Army reservist.
That's right.
And could you tell us a little bit about the unit that you were in from Georgia?
Oh, yes, I can tell you a lot about it.
I know.
I've been associated for about 50 years now. We were an Army Reserve unit based in Augusta, Georgia, and we had about 150 men in the unit at that time. They lived some in Augusta, some in neighboring towns, but we were a transportation company, and we did not expect to go to the Vietnam War.
Yeah, I would think not, right.
It didn't turn out that way. The whole company was activated in early 1968, and they sent us up to Fort Lee, Virginia for 3 or 4 months. And then they gave us some, like, 40 or 50 brand-new 5-ton trucks right off the rail head there at Fort Lee. And we got them ready for rolling, and they sent them down to Norfolk, loaded them on a ship, and sent them to Vietnam. And we left 2 weeks later on C-141 Air Force transport planes. And we landed in Vietnam, although nobody told us where we were going. They just said, get on the plane.
Oh, of course.
So we landed, and we got over to our company area, and we had to wait for about 2 weeks for our trucks to get there. And during those 2 weeks, we rode shotgun on other trucks, on convoys, learning the routes and all the procedures.
Well, where were you in Vietnam?
We were based at Long Bien on what's called TC Hill, or was called TC Hill, Transportation Corps. And we were part of the 6th Battalion of the 48th Group, Transportation Group. And there were, I don't know how many companies in our battalion, and plus another whole battalion, all based on Long Bien there.
Okay. Well, I asked that question because I was based at Long Bien also, but I was on the other side of the road on the poor side of town, I think, is where they kept us. But the I guess the question would be that, I mean, obviously you have some great stories. You and Tim and the rest of you have some great stories. But why did you write this particular book at this time?
Well, I wrote it published it a little over 2 years ago, but I didn't start out to write a book. I just had these thoughts in my mind, and I wanted to record them on a computer for friends and family before I got too old and forgot about them. Because I thought it was important. We had done something important, and nobody was talking about it, and nobody had any idea, I think, what we had done. So some of the guys in the unit, we still have 40 or 50 or 60 of them still living around Augusta, and a few of them encouraged me to get it in a book. And so I set about doing it. I'm not an author. This is the only book I've ever written. And it's been a real blessing for us. We've enjoyed meeting lots of new people and selling some of the books, but it meant so much to the guys in the company because it tells their family what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked very hard over there, and these guys from Augusta and our reserve unit served honorably. We didn't do any drugs. We just worked our cans off 7 days a week, 16, 20 hours a day, sometimes not sleeping at all at night or sleeping in the truck maybe. We worked very hard, and we did what was expected of us, so we're all proud of it now.
Well, I think that's important, Bill, that we do get these stories out. I think, you know, there was such a misconception about so many of the Vietnam era veterans that, and because of what was going on in the society, most of us just shut our mouths and went about our lives for 30 or 40 years. And then we finally got mad enough where we said, hey, you know, we accomplished a lot. We did what we were told to do. And I think that, you know, it's like you can't get mad at the warrior for doing what the politicians want you to do. And, you know, most people didn't resist going. And I think that that's really honorable for what you did. I've found that it's become a much more of a mutual admiration society when we get to hear your stories, because I didn't know what truck drivers did, much like you know, you saw us flying on top. That was about it.
Yeah.
And so now I know how, by reading your book, and the book is called Vietnam Convoy Trucker, and it's by Bill Patterson, and it's available on Amazon, and we'll give you some more places where you can find it later on. But it's just a really good read about what was going on the ground, not from the infantry standpoint, but the Army travels on its stomach, and you guys are bringing food and bringing everything else you could think of out there.
Yeah, you know, I think most books about wars are written by former officers, Dale, and all us drivers were low-grade enlisted men.
That's very true. And they seem to have a different perspective on the whole thing. And I was talking with it might have been with you, but, you know, the officers, they lived in one tent. The Warren officers lived in another tent. The upper level listed, you know, the top NCOs, they lived in another tent. And then you had the E3s, 4s, and 5s living in another tent, and never the twain shall mix.
Yeah.
And I think...
Before we get too far along, I did want to tell you that my friend Tim here has gotten a bum rap. He took a great number of the pictures in this book, and when we published that, I was not aware of it, so I did not mention his name.
I've given him a hard time ever since.
Is he the unidentified 319th TC member?
That's the guy. He's the guy.
Okay, well, that's not fair, because there are some really great pictures in here there are trucks and sitting out in the middle of nowhere or sleeping out in the middle of nowhere. And I think that that's always fun. And these are huge trucks. Tim, how big were they?
They were challenging to drive. They were bigger than a deuce and a half, twice the hauling capacity of a deuce and a half.
So these are 5-ton trucks?
These 5-ton cargo trucks, M54A2s. And some of your listeners out there know where we can find one for a parade truck. I wish you'd give Bill a contact. We have tried to find one. We've got a friend that allows us to use a deuce and a half in St. Patrick's Day mm-hmm. Parade, Veterans Day Parades, but left before our guys that were our mechanics get too old or pass away to come up with a genuine M54A2 Vietnam-era truck.
We'll have to find out. How many gears did this truck have?
5 gears.
Five?
It had a 5-speed transmission, but it had a dual range.
Okay.
What it means was you can engage just two of the wheels maybe or all of the wheels.
Okay. They made the mistake one time of sending me to Saigon in a deuce and a half, and I after taking out half the civilians on Highway 1, I think I don't think I ever got out of first gear.
Oh no.
They said I broke their truck. So I can only empathize with what you guys were doing. Driving through some of those villages had to be scary.
It was to me. I was scared the whole time I was over there because we ran over road mines and we were involved in 6 or 7 ambushes. I was very blessed. I drove over 15,000 miles over there, and I saw very little action very up close. I was around a lot that was mm-hmm. going on, but I was very blessed over. Most of us were blessed.
I think that that's always interesting. You know, they always say that, you know, being in a war is, you know, 80% not necessarily boredom, but not a whole lot going on, and then something really big happens, and then you got to come down from that and go back and do your regular job. And the thing about Vietnam or anybody that's in the military, I think, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, is you never know what's around the next corner.
That is true.
And, you know, and with all the bad guys looking the same, unfortunately, to us, we never knew who the good guys were and who the bad guys were.
And when we started out, we had a white star on our door that was painting a bullseye for Charlie on us.
Oh, I see the picture. Yeah, the picture here. Now you have a black star on there.
Yeah, if you look indeed and see the black stars, I was in an ambush. And came back in, and I was fussing about there was an artillery gun being pulled on a trailer in front of me. And during the ambush, there was a canister covering the barrel of the artillery gun. And we got out of the kill zone, and there was a bullet hole in the canister that was covering that gun. So I come back in, and I talk to my platoon sergeant, and I say, you know, they've got this white star that's making a bullseye on us. And the next day they pull me off the road, and gave me a can of black paint and a stencil of the star. And I think we were the first company over there that went blackout with the stars on our door. But we noticed that we were not the only ones, and it became commonplace with the other units following the 319th's lead.
Well, I could certainly agree with that. For a long time, we flew camouflage aircraft with no identifications on them, and we liked it that way until somebody buzzed the battalion headquarters, sort of like Top Gun, and some guy came out and said, "Who were those guys?" And they said, "I don't know," but he says, "I want numbers on every aircraft from now on." And spoiled everybody's fun. We're coming up on a break, guys. And when we come back, we'll talk more about where you went and some of the missions that you were on. Tim, I didn't get your last name.
Last name is Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-L-L, like the soup company.
Okay, got it. I'll put that down. Okay, we'll be back. We're talking to Vietnam truck drivers, and we want you all to give us a call. 734-822-1600, 844-838-1600, and we'll get you on the air. I know we're talking to some convoy guys that wanted to be on the program. So you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back.
Hiding in the morning sun, I'll be driving in the evening calm, watching the phantoms roll in, and I watch them pull away again. Now I'm just sitting in the cab of my truck, thinking this life ain't such a game.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and that's just for you guys. So we are talking with Bill Patterson and Tim Campbell of the 319th Transportation Company from Augusta, Georgia, and their adventures in Vietnam in 1969. So did you guys sleep in your trucks?
Quite often.
Sometimes quite often? That's what I thought.
At all. Most nights we had nice bunks at Long Bend with mosquito nets, but many times we didn't have anything. We'd get to a place like Quan Loi and have to stay overnight sometimes. And you'd either try to grab a few hours in the cab of the truck or maybe sleep under the truck, which was not a comfortable thing, or not sleep at all. That was a problem I had. We mm-hmm. never seemed to get enough sleep over there.
I can relate to that one. Seems like sleep was just non-existent, but, you know, that's the way it is. We were young, though, then.
I wasn't so young. I was about 24, 25 years old.
Oh, you were the old guy, right?
Yeah, I was an old guy.
Were you called pops?
They would wake us up quite early, and any time they said Quan Loi or Tay Ninh, we were ready to roll back over and say, forget it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Quan Loi and Tay Ninh. I'm familiar with both of those places. For those of you that are listening, that these were northwest of Saigon, really starting to get closer and closer to the Cambodian border. And supposedly we controlled the roads during the daytime, but definitely not at night.
Yep.
So what was this was up, what? That was Highway 13?
Yeah, 13 went to Quan Loi.
It's amazing what I can remember. I can't remember what I did this morning, but I can remember that.
Yes, Thunder Road was his nickname.
Yes, that would go right past Cu Chi.
Yeah, Cu Chi, and then it would turn north and go straight up to Quan Loi. And Quan Loi was probably 5 miles from the Cambodian border and the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Very dangerous place and very isolated. We didn't like to be there.
You didn't like going there, huh? Did you do these trips, a round trip, or did you go one way and then catch a nap and come back?
We've done both. It depends on really how well the unloading process went and the condition of the roads, if they were safe, if somebody determined they were safe or not, and many other factors. But it was a long trip. It was like 60 miles on the road from Long Bend to Quan Loi, and the convoys averaged about 15 miles an hour. So it would take us about 4 hours to get there. Then you got to get unloaded. And then you're looking at 4 more hours or more going back to Long Bend. So it was, at best, it was a 10-hour day.
Wow.
And often it was much more than that.
Right. Well, Bill, what kind of, did you have any armament on your trucks?
We had nothing put on our trucks that wasn't put on at the factory when they made the truck. Some of the guys, maybe in other companies, would put sandbags in the floor of the trucks as a protection against road mines. They did have some armored deuce-and-a-half trucks. They were called gun trucks, but not in our company. I don't think we had a single one. I did see a very few of those during the time we were in Vietnam.
Okay, that must have been what I was talking to another veteran the other day, and he said that he was in a gun truck. And I was speaking of gun trucks. Did you have any guard trucks or anything that would escort you back and forth up to Quan Loi and back?
Yeah, we had Well, the convoy leader would be in a jeep with a radio, and they would have an M60 machine gun on the jeep, and we had mounts, rotary mounts, built into some of our trucks, and we could mount an M60 machine gun on our trucks, but they weren't very effective. The roads were so bad that the guns would spring out of the mounts and fall into the cab and hit us on the head, knock our steel pots off, and we'd go bouncing around in the truck when we were trying to drive. They weren't very effective. And
I was going to say, I can't imagine hitting anything.
No, yeah, and plus, it just didn't work out very well. It sort of made you comfortable to know you had a machine gun there, but at the same time, you're a sitting duck target for anybody who wants to shoot at you.
Well, Tim, did you have any exciting times with your travels up north or down to the Delta? Because I know you went down to the Delta, too.
I had a lot of runs to St. Ann and Quan Loi. I think I only had one run to Vung Tau the whole time that I was over there. But that was an interesting situation there. That was place that you had some in-country R&R, and from what I understand, you had one beach that the Americans utilized and another beach that the Viet Cong utilized. Or at least that's the story I got from a sergeant major friend of mine that I knew from the Augusta area that was stationed over there.
Well, that's what I had heard, too, is that the Vung Tau was shared by both sides for a rest and relaxation area, and I guess it was kind of a a ceasefire went on while you were in there. That's strange.
That was the theory.
Hopefully it worked. I'm looking through the book, and I don't want to give away all the chapters because some of them are really, they're very intense, and some of them are very humorous. I have to admit that too. But I wanted to ask you, Bill, about your helicopter gunship incident at Xi'an.
Okay. Yeah, I remember it clearly. We had to go to Xi'an. You remember where Xi'an
was.
It's, 10 or 15 miles from Long Bend, a short run. So I convoyed down there, and they sent me out into a big storage yard, which was probably looked like a tenth of a mile square. And I was out there by myself, and they told me a forklift was going to come and unload the truck. I forget what I had. So I'm sitting there broiling in the heat, and I take off my green jacket, and I had on a white T-shirt. So I climbed up on top of the truck and tried to get some fresh air, and I'm sitting there, and I look up in the sky, and I see a Cobra helicopter up probably a few thousand feet, and it's sitting in a stationary position. It's not moving. And I thought that was a little unusual because they were always moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him for 5 or 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, I heard his motor roar, and I looked up, and this thing had dropped its nose and turned and was coming in a power dive straight at my truck.
Ooh.
And so I had a few seconds. I'm looking at these rockets and machine guns pods pointed directly at me and nothing else. And this guy's diving at me at probably 300 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, that is one of our copters, isn't it?
Did the other guys get one? What happened here?
And I'm staring at this thing, and I can't go anywhere. You know, he's going to get me if he wants to get me. I'm just sitting there looking at him, staring at him, and he's diving. Finally, he gets about 50 feet over me, and he pulls up out of his dive and shoots back up in the sky. And I decided that I had been sitting there long enough that day. So I jumped down in the truck and put it in reverse gear and drove it as fast as I could backwards and jabbed on the brakes, and all my cargo went flying off on the ground.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah, we tailgated it. And I went to rejoin the convoy, and that night I went to the PX and bought some olive drab T-shirts. I was not going to be a target again in a white T-shirt.
Good point. I think the guy was probably up there around 3,000 feet in a headwind, and so he could stay at a hover that high. That's kind of unusual that you can do that. But I'm sure that the white shirt was also, he just wanted to scare you. And I guess I'd say he probably did.
Yeah.
Probably just playing with you.
Yeah, that's all they did. You mentioned, in that little song intro that we had, he said he was talking about, jets flying over the top of the truck in the song. Did you ever have any jets that ended up near where you were?
Yeah, we saw jets almost daily. I recall one particular. It might have been you flying around in one of those copters one day.
It could have been me.
We were leaving, again, Quan Loy, headed back to Long Bend, and it's about 110 degrees, so we're driving along about half asleep in the convoy. All of a sudden, right over my truck, coming from the back of my truck, so I didn't see it coming. It was one of these small helicopters, and he wasn't 30, 40 feet above truck. He was going right over the convoy in the same direction we were going, but he was flying at full speed, and it choked me up so bad I almost jumped out of the truck.
I can't say I ever did anything like that, but I have a feeling that I knew people that did, let's put it that way. Sometimes we did fly convoy escort, up to Tainin and stuff, and that was got pretty monotonous because, you just fly next to you and then we turn around and come back and kind of do a big giant racetrack around to see where you guys were up to. I see you also have a story in here about the water buffalo, and we ran into those guys a few times.
Yeah.
Did you have trouble with those?
Yeah, well, we didn't have any trouble with them, or I didn't. We saw them in the field regularly. They were everywhere, and what got my attention was they would have these little 10-year-old kids out there managing these buffalo, which probably weighed 1,000 or 2,000 pounds, and the kid weighed about 60 pounds maybe. But they took care of them. And I did hear that one GI did, I guess he was bored one day, he decided he would shoot one. And he was caught, and I don't know what became of him, but I'm sure he had to pay a large bill for that water buffalo.
I would think so, because the water buffalo is like a tractor and your truck and your car and everything else to the Vietnamese people that were there. I think that's kind of interesting that you mentioned that. I know I knew somebody that took a shot at him, and it cost him a lot
to get that.
So, you mentioned that, you get to drive all over the country and see a lot of different things. You mentioned, Bill, we're talking with Bill Patterson. His book is Vietnam Convoy Trucker, and he talked about one of the reasons that he wrote the book was to describe the constant alertness, I guess you could say, that was experienced by all war veterans. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Bill?
Sure. Well, I had trained infantry. That's what the Army trained me for. I was not trained to be a truck driver, but I became a truck driver. I was with this unit, so I knew what bullets could do to people. And I knew we were in a war zone. Therefore, I was very alert the whole time we were there. I knew that at any second that gunfire explosives can be happening without any notice. So I always tried to avoid that if I could. But what it did, I guess it kept adrenaline pumping all the time, and it gave me a very clear mind. So I remembered all this stuff. Even today, I'm 73 years old now. But these things are still so clear in my mind, and I guess anybody who's been in a war zone has some measure of PTSD. If I have any, it's very mild, but some of the guys did develop severe cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. It just kept me very alert. I was very pleased that it did.
I think that's why we didn't get as much sleep, because you were on edge all the time, and you never really knew when a rocket was going to arrive with your name on it, or a bullet was going to, you know, not just hit the, you know, the truck in front of you. It might hit your truck. And,
yep.
And about that, I'll ask either one of you to comment on that, Jim or Bill. You mentioned in here about you did lose one member of your unit, Roy Miller.
Yes.
Can you tell me what happened to Roy?
Well, he was at Quan Loy, and again, he was trying to escape the heat during the day, and he got underneath the truck trying to grab a few minutes nap, I suppose. And another driver was up in the cab of the truck, and what we were told was the driver accidentally released the brake on the truck. It rolled back over Roy and killed him. Now, I wasn't there at Quan Loy the day it happened, but that's what the word was. That's apparently what happened. He was killed accidentally. And that's, you can think, you know, you weren't getting enough sleep, and you'd do about anything to get a nap. And apparently Roy got in the wrong place, and he was killed by one of the heavy trucks.
I think the way that you described, one of the things that you described was, and I had to do this one time too, is you had to pack up all of his stuff and his belongings.
I personally did not have to do that. They sent someone down from the supply room to do it, one of our company members. But I slept about 15 feet from Roy Miller's bunk when we could sleep there on Long Bend. So I got to see him regularly, and we knew him for years before we went to Vietnam. It was a tough night.
That is always tough. And then, you know, the bunk is just there. And
what can you add about that, Tim?
And let me tell you a little bit about Roy.
Okay.
Roy was a very good guy. I was one of the younger members of the unit, and there were 18 of us who had not experienced basic training when the unit was called on active duty.
Oh.
And we would go up and we would drill at the reserve center. And Roy was my instructor, and he would say, "Fellas, this will help you when you get to basic training." He was never really a difficult person to get along with. It's kind of matter of fact. This will help you. He didn't let rank go to his head. I had not arrived in Vietnam when Roy got killed, and I was on my leave from AIT before going to Vietnam, and I actually had the opportunity to go to Roy's funeral in Augusta. And I can remember his parents and the wives and family of other members of the 319th being there. And I can remember, as part of the service, military service, there was a 21-gun salute. And I can remember the shrieks of the families of our guys, my soon-to-be brothers in arms, and I said, you know, hey, if I'm fixing to go over there, if I get killed over there, I don't want a military funeral. it was too difficult on the on the family or on the families. But over the years, I've changed my my opinion.
They certainly are very powerful. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I was looking at another part of the book, Bill. We're talking with Bill Patterson, author.
May I interrupt you just a second? One other thing about Roy Miller before you leave the subject. We succeeded in getting the Army Reserve Center in Augusta, Georgia, named for Roy Miller. It took us a number of years to get that accomplished, but we wanted to be absolutely sure that Roy was never forgotten, and his name is on the U.S. Army Reserve Center in Augusta, Georgia, on Wrightsboro Road.
Well, thank you very much about that. I think that's really important, and I think, Bill, it's kind of what you wrote the book for, is you want to make sure that nobody forgets that, you know, what it was that you did while you were in service, and, you know, for your country and just for the Augusta area, it's, you know, since all of you young men are still living down there, it's got to be important that you get together and talk about these stories. I'm reading about the big guns of Quan Loy here, with a picture of Black Virgin Mountain up near Tay Nin. I landed on top of that mountain a couple of times.
Oh, no.
I didn't like that up there.
Oh, no.
Because all the bad guys were on the side of the hill, and you had to, you know, wasn't enough space on top of the mountain to get up at an airspeed enough to take off directly up, and you had to dive down the side of the mountain to get airspeed you could take off. But you were talking about this. What reminded me about this one was that they don't tell you when artillery's around you, you know, if it's boom whoosh or whoosh boom, you know, what's coming in and what's going out. And you talk about one of these things. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that, a 175 going off, and you were pretty close to it.
Oh, boy. I was about 50 feet from that thing, and it was the middle of the night at Quan Loy. And, again, I was trying to sleep a little in the cab of the truck. And without any warning, that thing went off, and it felt like my 5-ton truck jumped up in the air when the round exploded. And I didn't know what it was, like you said. I didn't know if it was incoming or outgoing. But it shook me up.
How high do you think you jumped?
I don't know, but it was high.
That was just you banging your head on your truck, Bill.
Yeah.
Probably. I was just thinking about that, because a similar time I was out in the walking past an artillery base, and they fired off their guns, and they said that I jumped about 10 feet in the air. My feet were moving when I hit the ground, and it was like I was digging a trench with my feet. I was going so fast.
What a sound.
It is. That's right. And that's why the VA says, hey, here's your hearing aid. You can't hear anything. What? You're right. I can't.
Yep.
You guys keep firing guns off you. Why didn't you give us earplugs at least? Well, we got about 5 minutes to go. I want to make sure that you guys get whatever it is that you want to say in here. So, Tim, I'm going to go with you first. Any last words you'd like to pass on to us?
Well, just, you know, the 319th, I think we are a unique company in that almost 50 years after the fact of our service, we have annual reunions, big ones every 3 to 5 years, and we get together for St. Patrick's Day Parade, which is a fun time, and Veterans Day Parade, which is a more serious time, and we communicate with still around 100 guys that we served with. And from what I've been told, we are very unique in that. Our company commander, Paul D. Drew Troxler, is still alive, 80 years old, lives down in Savannah, Georgia. Captain then, Colonel now Troxler, he's he comes up. We have a Christmas party as well as the annual reunion, and he and his wife Joanne drive up from Savannah every time to see us. I think that we owe a debt of gratitude to Drew Troxler for the type of men he made us into, and we still look at him as a father figure for those of us who no longer have living parents.
Well, that's very true. Thank you very much, Tim.
Okay.
On that, you know, I talked with one of my company commanders a couple of months ago, and it was like we stepped back in time. He was still the boss as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
they're always the boss. All right, we got 2 minutes to go, Bill. So where can we order this book? Where
Good.
Can I get a copy of this sucker?
Okay, thanks for asking. The book is available on the Internet at Amazon.com. Barnes & Noble bookstores have them online or in the stores. You can buy them from the publisher, ZulonPress.com/bookstore. Zulon is spelled X-U-L-O-N. Mm-hmm. If you want signed copies, you can contact me personally. My home telephone number is 706-863-0697. My email address is bowlinbilly@knology.net.
I'll put that information up on our website, so if they want to get a signed copy, they can. I want to thank you both very much for being on Veterans Radio. I appreciate all the effort that you putting this book together. It was fun going down memory lane with you, and I'm hoping to have you all back on again at some point.
Be glad to, Dale. Thank you very much for the good work you're doing up there.
Thank you very much. Give my regards.
Dale, thank you for the privilege of being on with you.
Well, thank you, and say hello to all of our friends down there in Georgia that keep referring people to me all the time. It's a great story. I want to thank them very much. So until next week, I think we're all set. We're going to be doing a program. I'm not sure what the topic will be, but you'll be ready for it. And we want to make sure you go to veteransradio.net if you want to listen to this whole program tonight on our archives. And we will be back next week. Until then, you are dismissed.